Unit 4. The Singing Lesson. A short story by Catherine Mansfield. Pages 67 to 70.
With despair, cold, sharp despair, buried deep in her heart like a wicked knife, Miss Meadows, in cap and gown and carrying a little baton, walked the cold corridors that led to the music hall. Girls of all ages, rosy from the air, and bubbling over with that gleeful excitement that comes from running to school on a fine autumn morning, hurried, skipped, fluttered by. From the hollow classrooms came a quick drumming of voices. A bell rang. A young girl's voice, like a bird, cried,
"Muriel, you will die when you hear this."
The science teacher stopped Miss Meadows.
"Good morning," she cried in her sweet southern accent. "Isn't it cold? It might be winter."
Miss Meadows stared in hatred at the science teacher. Everything about her was sweet, pale, like honey. You would not have been surprised to see a bee caught in the curls of that yellow hair. She smiled her sugary smile.
"You look frozen," said she to Miss Meadows.
Her blue eyes opened wide. They came a mocking light in them. Had she noticed anything?
"Oh, not quite as bad as that," said Miss Meadows,
and she gave the science teacher, in exchange for her smile, a quick grimace. Continuing down the corridor, Miss Meadows made her way to class. Forms 4, 5, and 6 were assembled in the music hall. The noise was deafening. On the platform, by the piano, stood Mary Beasley, Miss Meadows' favorite student, who played accompaniments. She was turning the music stool. When she saw Miss Meadows, she gave a loud warning.
"Shh, shh, girls!"
Miss Meadows, her hands thrust in her sleeves, the baton under her arm, marched down the center aisle, mounted the steps, turned sharply, seized the brass music stand, planted it in front of her, and gave 2 sharp taps with her baton for silence.
"Silence, please, immediately!"
And looking at nobody, her glance swept over that sea of colored flannel blouses with pink faces and hands and music books opened wide. She knew perfectly well what they were thinking.
"Teacher's in a really bad mood today."
Well, let them think it. Her eyelids quivered. She tossed her head. What could the thoughts of those young creatures matter to someone like her, who stood there bleeding to death, pierced to the heart by such a letter? "I feel more and more strongly that our marriage would be a mistake. Not that I do not love you. I love you as much as it is possible for me to love any woman. But, truth to tell, I have come to the conclusion that I am not a marrying man. And the idea of settling down fills me with nothing but..." And the word disgust was scratched out lightly and regret written over the top. "Oh, Basil!" Miss Meadows stalked over to the piano, and Mary Beasley, who was waiting for this moment, bent forward. Her curls fell over her cheeks while she breathed.
"Good morning, Miss Meadows," and she handed her teacher a beautiful yellow flower.
They had had this little ritual of the flower for ages and ages. It was as much part of the lesson as opening the piano. But this morning she did not take the flower from the girl, tuck it into her belt, and say, "Thank you, Mary. How very nice." How great was Mary's horror when her teacher totally ignored the flower, made no reply to her greeting, but said in a voice of ice,
"Page 14, please."
A staggering moment. Mary blushed until the tears stood in her eyes, but Miss Meadows had gone back to the music stand. Her voice rang through the music hall.
"Page 14. We will begin with page 14. The song is called A Lament.
Now, girls, you ought to know it by this time. We shall take it all together, not in parts, all together, and without expression. Sing it, though, quite simply, beating time with your left hand." She raised the baton and tapped the music stand twice.
Mary played the opening chord, and the girls sang in those young, sad voices.
Good heavens! What could be more tragic than a lament? Every note was a sigh, a sob, a groan of awful sadness.
Miss Meadows lifted her arms in the wide gown and began conducting with both hands.
I feel more and more strongly that our marriage would be a mistake.
And the girls' voices sang, Fleetly, ah, Fleetly!
What could have possessed him to write such a letter? What could have led up to it? It came out of nothing. His last letter had been all about an oak bookcase he had bought for our books, and a nice little night table he had seen, a beautiful hand-carved piece. How she had smiled at that.
From the listening ear, sang the voices.
Once again, said Miss Meadows, but this time in parts, still without expression.
Fade the roses of pleasure, the voices sang.
Last time he had come to see her, Basil had worn a rose in his buttonhole. How handsome he had looked in that bright blue suit, with that dark red rose. And he knew it, too. He couldn't help knowing it.
The headmaster's wife keeps on asking me to dinner. It's a perfect nuisance. I never get an evening to myself in that place, Basil had said.
But can't you refuse?
Oh, well, it doesn't do for a man in my position to be unpopular.
Music's gay measure, cried the voices.
The willow trees, outside the high, narrow windows, waved in the wind. They had lost half their leaves.
I am not a marrying man.
The voices were silent. The piano waited.
Quite good, said Miss Meadows, but still in such a strange, stony tone that the younger girls began to feel positively frightened.
But now that we know it, we shall take it with expression. As much expression as you can put into it. Think of the words, girls. Use your imaginations. In the second line, winter drear. Make the word drear sound as if a cold wind were blowing through it. The third line should be one crescendo.
Fleetly, ah, fleetly, music's gay measure.
And then on the word away, you must begin to fade until your voice is nothing more than a faint whisper. You can slow down as much as you like almost on the last line.
Now, please.
Again, the two light taps. She lifted her arms again.
And the idea of settling down fills me with nothing but disgust.
Disgust was what he had written.
That was as good as to say their engagement was definitely broken off.
Broken off! Their engagement! People had been surprised enough that she had got engaged. The science teacher could not believe it at first. But nobody had been as surprised as she. She was 30. Basil was 25. It had been a miracle, simply a miracle, to hear him say, as they walked home that very dark night, "You know, somehow or other, I've got fond of you."
"Repeat, repeat," said Miss Meadows. "More expression, girls, once more."
The older girls were bright red. Some of the younger ones began to cry. Big spots of rain blew against the windows, and one could hear the willows whispering,
"Not that I do not love you."
"But, my darling, if you love me," thought Miss Meadows, "I don't mind how much it is. Love me as little as you like." But she knew he didn't love her. Not to have cared enough to scratch out that word disgust so that she couldn't read it. She would have to leave the school, too. She could never face the science teacher or the girls after it became known. She would have to disappear somewhere. The voices began to die, to fade, to whisper, to vanish. Suddenly the door opened. A little girl in blue walked up the aisle, hanging her head, biting her lips, and twisting the silver bracelet on her red little wrist. She came up the steps and stood before Miss Meadows.
"Well, Monica, what is it?"
"Oh, if you please, Miss Meadows," said the little girl, gasping. "Miss Wyatt wants to see you in the mistress's room."
"Very well," said Miss Meadows, and she called to the girls. "I shall put you on your honor to talk quietly while I am away." But they were too subdued to do anything else. Most of them were blowing their noses.
The corridors were silent and cold. They echoed to Miss Meadows' steps. The headmistress sat at her desk. For a moment she did not look up. She was, as usual, disentangling her eyeglasses, which had got caught in her lace tie.
"Sit down, Miss Meadows," she said very kindly.
And then she picked up a pink envelope from her desk. "I sent for you just now because this telegram has come for you."
"A telegram for me, Miss Wyatt?"
"Passel. He was dead," decided Miss Meadows. Her hand flew out, but Miss Wyatt held the telegram back a moment. "I hope it's not bad news," she said kindly. Miss Meadows tore it open. "Pay no attention to letter. Must have been mad. Bought hat stand today. Basil." She couldn't take her eyes off the telegram. "I do hope it's nothing very serious," said Miss Wyatt, leaning forward.
"Oh, no. Thank you, Miss Wyatt," blushed Miss Meadows.
"It's nothing bad at all. It's..."
And she gave an apologetic little laugh.
"It's from my fiancé saying that...
There was a pause. "I see," said Miss Wyatt, and another pause. Then, "You've 15 minutes more of your class, Miss Meadows, haven't you?"
"Yes, Miss Wyatt." She got up.
She half ran towards the door.
"Oh, just 1 minute, Miss Meadows," said Miss Wyatt.
"I must say I don't approve of my teachers having telegrams sent to them in school hours, unless in case of very bad news, such as death," explained Miss Wyatt, "or a very serious accident, or something to that effect. Good news, Miss Meadows, will always keep, you know." On the wings of hope, of love, of joy, Miss Meadows sped back to the music hall, up the aisle, up the steps, over to the piano.
"Page 32, Mary," she said, "page 32. And picking up the yellow flower, she held it to her lips to hide her smile.
Then she turned to the girls, rapped with her baton.
"Page 32, girls, page 32.
"We come here today with flowers o'erladen, with baskets of fruit and ribbons to boot, to congratulate..."
"Stop, stop," cried Miss Meadows. "This is awful. This is dreadful." And she smiled at her girls. "What's the matter with you all? Think, girls, think of what you're singing. Use your imaginations. Don't look so sad, girls. It ought to sound warm, joyful, eager. All together, now then."
And this time Miss Meadows' voice sounded over all the other voices, full, deep, glowing with expression.